This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris with the Norris Group, and we are super excited to close out our accessory dwelling unit series with the panel discussion we had on June 11th at the San Diego Creative Investors Association. I was joined by the mayor of Encinitas, Catherine Blakespear, Greg Nicholas, he is the senior housing analyst for the California Department of Housing and Community Development, Jeff Plegman, planner of Encinitas, Brent Johnson, collateral risk for Home Street Bank, Michelle Rodriguez, she was with the California Mortgage Association and a hard money lender, John Aronson with Crest Backyard Homes, and also Jordan Marks. He's a taxpayers' rights advocate for San Diego County. Very interesting and diverse panel, and I hope you enjoy.
First, Mayor Blakespear, are you crazy? No fees. I just want you to know, that's not normal. What I've been seeing out in the market, the fact that you waive the fees, people would think you're absolutely crazy in this market. You're the first I've heard do that. You got all the other council members to sign on to that? They're all for it?
I think that we're really sending a message about what's important to us. And in the big picture, Encinitas is an affluent community. So we still struggle to pay for all the projects we want and that kind of thing. But when you look at what is the amount of money we'd be collecting, and is that something that we're willing to forego to make this something that is a real part of our city? It is. So it's making a policy decision.
Greg, the Turner Center has a lot of data, and they had a big list of a large amount of cities, and some of them were over 50 grand in fees alone. So when you're talking about a structure that's 600 square feet, I mean, that's insane. Have you seen very many cities say, no fees, it's okay, we'll eat it?
No. I think Encinitas is one of the very few. There are probably maybe two others that come to mind. We should track that, but we're not tracking it now. It's something that we're working on, and that study that I mentioned about the Mitigation Fee Act study and the report to the legislature, we'll probably see something come out of that. Probably have to push a little bit harder, though, because of the time that they might take to look at that. But some of the jurisdictions are just not analyzing that well, or at all.
Well, now that I have your attention, so my name is Jordan Marks, work for Assessor Ernie Dronenberg at the County Assessor Recorder Clerk's Office, but I also wanted to just give you some insight. The County of San Diego did waive building permit fees, parking fees, and transportation fees. So if you are operating in county property, it also will apply there. The only thing that, as you did note, school fees, fire fees, and septic tank. So for you operating in the county, we do have some special septic rules. And I would say keep your heads up on that one when you get to it. So,
okay. John, when I met you, I guess it's about 8 months ago, we started talking about San Diego County, and there were some cities that you wouldn't even consider working with because they were such a pain in the rear. Has that gotten better or worse?
I'd say that most of the jurisdictions are starting to embrace the new laws.
They know it's coming anyway.
Yeah, and you know, everybody does acknowledge the fact that there is a shortage of housing. So, and as Mayor kind of hit on earlier, it doesn't impact too extremely dramatically in any one area as far as density is concerned. I'd much rather have ADUs in my street than an apartment down at the end of the street.
What's wrong with the bargain complex? Jeez, you're getting really beat up today. Let's stick with you for a little bit and talk about, a lot of people just don't know what you can build, and I guess we'll go back to the city of Encinitas as well, about their preference, because your specialty is manufactured homes. How long have you been doing manufactured homes?
35 years.
Okay, so you've been in the business a long time.
Yeah, a bit.
And do they look a little different than they did 30 years ago?
Most definitely. We used to call them wobbly boxes back in the 70s.
Yes. What's the turnaround time now that the fires and the hurricanes have sort of died down, the turnaround time to get a manufactured compared to a stick-built?
Well, depending on the manufacturer, there's still a lot of manufacturers that are servicing those disaster-prone areas and probably will be for some time.
Okay.
But companies I represent basically are all local companies, and they're kind of removed from those disaster-prone areas. You're probably looking at about 4 to 6 weeks turnaround time.
And when you're doing a stick-built, what would the time be?
Probably anywhere from 4 months to a year.
4 months in somebody's dream.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, ADU. Yeah, they can be done. The turnaround time on those are a little quicker. And if you can get through the permit process and all the minutiae.
And the cost comparison for, let's just do something simple like a 600-foot ADU. Or one that you know of a manufacturer who builds a 600-square-foot?
I do.
Okay. What's the price on that compared to something you could build by it?
$50,000.
Really?
Yeah.
For the manufactured home.
With a manufactured home, of course, there are added costs. There's transportation, installation. You still have your permit fees if they're not waived. You still have your foundation work, your site work, your utility connections.
Okay.
Developmental fees if the cities or jurisdictions are charging them. So bottom line, 600 square foot, we could probably do manufactured under $100,000.
Wow. That's a big difference for cost-wise. And the neighbors will never see it coming. Just plops in the back and they're like, what? I didn't have time to complain to my city council person.
I might add, we have furnished models. You're more than welcome to come look at it.
Yeah.
Not too many people have furnished ADUs.
They really have come a long way. Warren Buffett being part owner of the Clayton Homes, right?
Correct.
I haven't done their walkthrough. I'll be in Texas later this month. So I'm going to try to make an effort to specifically go through. And Amazon, there's a manufactured... Amazon just invested in a company called Plant Prefab. Leading up to this, we did so far 5 radio shows. We had Senator Wachowski on for 2 shows. We then had you on for 2 shows. These are a little bit more investor focused, so we got super nerdy. And the last 2 weeks was Steve Glenn with Plant Prefab. He's been in the modular space for a long time, and Amazon just made a big investment in them this year. So why is Amazon getting in the space? I don't want Alexa in all my walls. I don't know yet, but... Let's go back to the city of Encinitas and maybe Jeff. First, I want to ask you, I have a few planners in my life and they're not at all happy that the state is coming in and forcing their hand. And my response to them is like, well, if you would have got serious about your affordable housing, the state wouldn't have to do this. But you're in the circles, you go to all the conferences, how are they feeling about life?
I think it depends on the planner and the municipality that they work for. I'm fortunate enough to work for one that was very proactive and was trying to find a way to increase housing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it really is dependent upon local variables.
Are other cities in San Diego looking at you guys and saying, like, yeah, we're going to wait to see how this goes? Or are they like, okay, we need to catch up?
They're waiting to see what happens.
Really?
Yeah, we definitely pushed the envelope a little bit with both our ordinance and with the Permit Ready program.
Okay.
And I know that there are municipalities around that are waiting to see how that's going. I've talked to many of them. We've had meetings with different municipalities to say that, you know, just picking our brain to say, like, what worked, what didn't. And we definitely had, I refer to it as a perfect storm. We had the political will, and we had the population that wanted to see this happen. We're a little bit smaller size city, which was a benefit for us, so we don't have as many variables to deal with, as say, as someone as large as San Diego. So I think there are a lot of things in our favor to push through what we've done so far.
Very cool. Let's go to taxes really quick. So somebody builds an accessory dwelling unit on their property. How is the property reassessed, stick-built, manufactured? How are you handling this?
Well, first, and this is the good news, your property doesn't get reassessed.
What?
So when you purchase a property...
Is this statewide or just for the San Diego?
This is statewide. So Proposition 13 basically sets a base year value for your land and the improvements on the property when you purchase that. If you change anything, then that's an addition to it. So, and a reassessment means that we would go back and raise the values of the entire property to today's values. So, let's say you bought a property for $100,000, home and land. We wouldn't reassess any of that, and actually the land would maintain the value at the time you purchased it. If you added a new addition, we would add the improved value to your current assessed value. So, it'd be a blend.
And when you say improved value, would that just be the cost of the structure?
So it would be the market value of that structure. So we had a very nice builder who had a lot of good contacts in the industry, and they built a $1 million home for very cheap. They got the inside deal. They got the best contractors. We charge you an assessed value based on the market value of all the homes in the community. So whatever that addition would be, if let's say you've got an inside deal, let's say Crest Homes is like, I'm going to throw one in my backyard because I got the free because I sold 10 of them. Even though you didn't pay anything for it, we would charge you the market rate value. That's the replacement cost new value of the improvement. So whatever a 3-bedroom, 3-bath in the community would go for of that size of equal comps, that's what we would do. And the Board of Equalization, which is our guiding agency at the state, actually provides us a handbook. So depending on the quality of the improvement and some various other factors, that's how we would arrive at that value.
Okay.
If you retrofit a garage, It would be the same thing like retrofitting a kitchen, whatever the improvement would be. We wouldn't reassess your external structure, but the improved value to that structure, that's the improvement cost. And we would blend that with your current assessed value. So let's say you paid $100,000 with the garage and you added $40,000 worth of market value to it. We wouldn't add it as a new structure. We would add $40,000 of assessed value to that.
Okay. It's been interesting. We have funded a few of these via different hard money loan routes. On the flip side, Investor Visa residents, 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, and while they're renovating the front, they're doing the back, and it makes a really nice flip. The appraisal hasn't been the issue, it's been the lending world, especially in the flip scenario because there's not enough comps. The appraisal hasn't been the issue when it comes to the lender. So one of the most recent examples, a real estate investor did a 3-2 primary that did a beautiful job on the rehab, and the back was a 2-2, and who wanted to buy it was a mom and dad in the front, and their daughter and granddaughter was going to live in the back. The lender was triggering a duplex rule where they wanted 25% down. They didn't see this as a single-family home with an ADU. How have you seen this shake out as far as the lending world? Is this on your radar?
Well, it kind of goes back to the highest and best use, to what the market's going to perceive that property to be. And for the realtors in the room, we know kind of where that goes. But what does the market perceive that property to be? Is it a single family dwelling with a junior or a smaller ADU? And if, in fact, that's what the market perceives it to be, that is what the lender and typically the conventional type investor will perceive that to be. So if both those units are somewhat similar, then we may have a multifamily type property. But in the case that you just described there, and if that's a primary dwelling and a junior subservient structure somewhere on the property or within the property, that is a single family.
I think I just picked up something important you said. So we funded another thing under a long-term program that we have where they had a free and clear rental. They did a refinance on the primary, so they built a similar structure. So the primary was a 2-1. It was 777 square feet. I sound like Rain Man. It's just the numbers I remember. I don't remember everything like this. But they decided to convert a garage to a similar 777 square foot secondary structure. In your eyes, would that trigger a problem because you don't have necessarily a subservient structure because they're both the same size?
Right. So as most all of us in real estate know, the famous two words, it depends.
Right? We didn't even get to the attorney in the room yet.
It depends. So that's a gray area, and there's a number of different criteria that are going to have to be looked at, analyzed by the appraiser, and then on to the underwriter. And underwriters, they've got their opinions and criteria just as the appraiser does. So when we get to a equal, that kind of a scenario, it is more gray. So we get to zoning, we get to the metered system. Do they both have meters? Do they both have addresses, et cetera? In terms of the overall lending function, though, speaking for a conventional type mortgage purpose, right? The GSE, the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's, they'll do either, but it is up to the valuer, the appraiser, to determine the highest and best use. Is that a duplex? Or is that a single family and ADU?
In this case, the appraisal, the value came in, and it was the lender's like, nope, and they even knew the family was co-qualifying together. So it was interesting to watch. Do you think the lending community will take a couple years to catch up, or will it catch on faster than we're thinking?
Obviously I don't represent Fannie Mae, but I do hear from them routinely, and they are also proactive to try to encourage more housing. So they are keenly aware of these issues, and they are in the process of their seminars. They're trying to educate both the lenders on the retail side, underwriting, appraisers, so we can get through that appropriately and determine what that collateral really is. Multifamily, single family, and an ADU.
Okay. And John, your wife has been in the lending business a long time on the manufactured housing side. I hear there's a lot of problems when you decide you're going to mix stick-built and manufactured ADUs in the back, as in lenders are not going to touch it, or pretend it's not there, or maybe make you take out the kitchen. You want to talk about that?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Yes, 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 yeah.
No, it's been a challenge, no doubt. It's starting to come around. There are more appraisers out there that are recognizing manufactured homes on site-built parcels as an ADU. But I got to say that there's a lot of appraisers out there that don't recognize an ADU on a resident-owned parcel.
Yeah.
So it kind of at both sides of the coin right now.
Well, on the lending side, will you fund mixed inventory?
In terms of the conventional mortgage process, yes, most lenders will look at that because Fannie and Freddie are both also in the business of trying to encourage more housing units.
Okay.
So we're seeing a trend that is recognizing both on the geopolitical kind of side and the market side, they have to now respond to.
Yeah.
So We get down, one of the big issues, as again, most of the realtors in the room will know, is it permitted or is it unpermitted? And how do we value that? What does Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac want in those cases? And there's a lot of misperception out there, I would say, and it's not permitted, so we can't include it. And that's not true. Fannie Mae, the GSEs, Freddie, they want these properties reported and valued to the marketplace.
Okay.
And as we know, in most of our cities now, the market doesn't care as much about permitting. And so Fannie has gotten a lot easier to deal with for the most part.
Who doesn't care about permitting?
Well.
He's all, wait a second. Yeah.
What they tell us is.
Oh, buyers are like, meh. Yeah.
Yeah. What they tell the lenders and the appraisers is we want it valued to the marketplace. So okay. In most of our towns in San Diego County, does a typical buyer, do they care if it's permitted or not?
Okay.
Oftentimes not. They do care. It has to be sound. I call it three S's. It has to be safe, sound, and secure, workmanlike, compatible, conforming.
Not those, even sanitary. Let's add an S. Come on.
Right. But those are okay. The issues that are out there today and that need to be front and center, and they are a big deal every day in the eyes of a lender because we have so many unpermitted improvements now because of everything we're talking about this evening. But I would say that on the mortgage lending side, it's getting better.
Okay. People just really need to know the risks going in. It sounds really sexy, and depending on the city, like I'm almost afraid because you guys came on so strong that I'm just afraid they're going to be so disappointed when they go back to their different cities because it's been so rough.
It has. But the big thing I also encourage is communication. For the realtors in the room, don't try to run from an unpermitted ADU or improvement. Get it out there. Get all the information that is available so the appraiser can look at that, report it accordingly, and let the lender know what it is or what needs to be corrected.
Yeah.
So we can move forward and get to the finish line, get to closing.
Jeff, if a real estate investor or realtor were to call you, does the planning department, there was the map that you had in your presentation on the ADUs throughout the city, would you be willing to give up that data as to show comps, possibly?
Oh, yeah. We do it every day.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. We have realtors stop in at our front counter every single day asking questions about units that are currently existing or the possibilities of what can be done with a piece of property.
I've been telling real estate in very specific things. So Greg mentioned that on the state website, they have a list. And when we originally did our research back in September to create, we created a list of every economic development agency for a seminar we put on with the number and the email that they should call. And a lot of them didn't have an ordinance in place. I'm telling real estate investors to go straight to the planning department and ask for the current ordinance, but to also ask the planning department and the local, hopefully it's a city council person or somebody, if there's something in the works. So when we were on the phone with Senator Wachowski, there was an investor on the call who said, Hawaiian Gardens has just declared a moratorium so they can study parking. And he laughed and he sort of like, yeah, that's not allowed. That was over last year. Your time is over. But there's no teeth to it. But from the planning perspective, is that where you would start, starting at the planning department and then possibly checking with a council member to be extra safe?
Absolutely. Yeah, you always want to do your due diligence.
Because while you're at the city council member, if somebody complains, the NIMBYs, let's talk about the NIMBYs real quick, the not in my backyarders. In your city particularly, how's the community receiving the ADU?
We had a lot of public support for them.
That's interesting.
We have a housing situation in Encinitas that we are trying to solve. And I think a lot of people recognize that this is a really good tool in the toolbox that we can take advantage of.
And you didn't get much pushback. That is really interesting. And I'd never heard it pitched that way, sort of like, do you want an apartment next door or do you want an ADU like every five houses or so? That's pretty brilliant. So you've been a city council member. Was it 5 years before you became mayor?
5 years.
5 years total.
Two
okay.
On city council and then 2.5 as mayor.
So you've had the ears of plenty of NIMBYs. And
I mean, I think the bottom line is there's no magic bullet if you're going to add more housing. So certainly people do complain. They say, well, I don't want someone to park in front of my house. It's like, well, you're going to have to get over that. Because basically, I mean, at some point, it's like something's got to give. And so what is it going to be? And to me, it seems like the least objectionable path forward is to have more ADUs. And so I am always expressing it in the most optimistic of terms. I mean, we're not permitting 50,000 of them, right? It's like it's still just ramping itself up. We did go through 500 plans in the first month where people were taking them off the shelf. I think people are really motivated by money. I mean, they're thinking, I'm going to be able to rent this and make money and support myself. And I think that's good because we're harnessing their interests. And I do want to hear from our seventh panelist at some point.
Yeah, we will.
But I think Jeff wanted to say something.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that the number one concern was always parking.
Okay.
Like the mayor said, it's something we just have to deal with. And I also think it's going to change, like just with autonomous vehicles and ride sharing, and younger generations aren't even getting their license anymore. That part of society is just changing in general. So it'll be slow to catch up, but it'll be happening to where that situation doesn't happen as often.
You guys have all been really nice. Like nobody brought up the boomerang generation and people living at home till they're 37. It's for seniors who want to age in place, them all. Or for the kids, you can't see them. You just want them in the backyard because you don't want to deal anymore.
Yeah. And I will say that when people did come to our planning commission meetings and even to city council, that it was people who were in support. And for the most part at the planning commission, they were pushing for the larger sizes.
That, really?
Yeah. Initially, we talked about limiting it. Encinitas formerly had a 750 square foot limit.
Right.
And so our planning commission was kind of working around that number, maybe going up a little bit. And there, people would come to every meeting and say, no, we need 1,200 square feet. We have our family, our children. We want to bring our parents back. So it was surprising.
I want to stick with you real quick to ask about the manufactured housing. Does the city of Encinitas care if it's stick built or manufactured housing?
Nope. Bring them.
Really? Okay. Interesting. Okay, Michelle, we should definitely come to you real quick. I feel like you've been left out. Do you have a mic? Let's talk to you real quick. Michelle and I have been part of the California Mortgage Association. How long have you been involved?
15 years.
She's my go-to because she's an attorney. And do you read the code and, like, do you like this stuff? It seems like you like it. You really know.
I don't know if I like it. I've read some of the ADU bills. I wouldn't call myself an ADU expert.
There was a lawsuit that just went around. The Department of Real Estate, just a private lender, if I get this wrong, let me know. So the primary residence owner-occupant took out a business loan to build an ADU because they wanted to get financing for business purpose because they were going to rent it out. And the Department of Real Estate...
I don't know if it was for an ADU, but this could happen on an ADU. Anybody who is thinking of building an ADU. Anyway, it was a broker. He was audited by the Department of Real Estate. And the borrower... He had made a loan to a borrower. It was an owner-occupied property, but it was for a business purpose. I don't know what the purpose was, but nobody disputed, not even the DRE, disputed that it was business purpose. And the Department of Real Estate held that it was a consumer loan. Why you guys should care about that is that the brokers have been making loans on the assumption that if it was business purpose, even if it was owner-occupied, that they wouldn't have to follow all the consumer lending laws. If a broker or a lender would have to follow all of the consumer lending laws for our business purpose loans, they likely would not make business purpose loans. And that would mean less places for you all to go and find a loan to build an ADU that you were just actually going to rent out to some unrelated member of the public, not your family member, for instance. That would probably be a consumer loan, depending. What the fallout is that the California Mortgage Association is trying to get things resolved with the Department of Real Estate and or introduce a bill to clarify the law so that it's more clear that a business purpose means business purpose and not consumer.
You're one of the only hard money lenders that I know that will work with consumers. Like the Norris Group for hard money doesn't touch, if they can say consumer, we're like, nope, I refer them to you because I don't want to touch them because it does come with so many more rules and regs. A decade later after the meltdown.
Right. What it's going to mean is that there's going to be a lot of private mortgage lenders like myself and like Aaron who are maybe doing business purpose loans on owner-occupied properties who are going to pull back, or they're going to require that you as the borrower show an ability to repay your loan just like you would, or very similar to how you would have to do for a conventional loan that you would just take out to refinance your regular mortgage.
I wanted you all to hear that as well, too. So we had the webinar with Senator Wachowski about a month ago, and I got a call immediately after from somebody from SDCIA who was on the phone. Her idea was to build the ADU. And I don't remember if she was going to stay in the primary or wanted to live in the ADU, but for the seniors wanting to retire in place, it just gets harder to qualify for loans, especially because their income is less. So when you start restricting the lending market, it's just going to make it more difficult.
Yes.
Yes. Is there anything else that you see coming down the pipeline in legislative slide?
Not legislatively. There was something I thought maybe it would be helpful for people who weren't seasoned investors. I think there's quite a few people here who perhaps aren't seasoned investors. Well, even if you are, maybe good to hear. One of the things you want to do is make sure that when you go into your project that you have a real good handle on your construction cost estimate.
Yes.
And build in contingencies. That's number one. Number two, then figure out, are you going to need financing? If you're going to need financing, you need to get it right away before you start construction. You're going to have big problems if you start thinking, I'm just going to do this all cash. Pretty sure I'm going to be able to do it all cash, and then run out of cash, and you're already halfway done with your project, and then go try to get a loan, I mean a mortgage loan, you're going to have a real hard time. So
tell them why.
Well, who's heard of mechanics liens?
Woo-woo! This is the right audience for those. They're like, oh.
Yeah, so mechanics liens are a major fear of lenders, but more importantly of title companies. And when you start a project, the material men and the subcontractors for the whole project, their liens, if they're not paid, they can put a lien on your property, and that lien will relate back to the first day that work was started on the project, no matter when in the process that subcontractor or material men came in. If they came in even at the very end, their lien would relate back all the way back to the beginning. Why does that matter? That matters because you start your project, and then maybe you didn't pay one of the subcontractors. Then you go get a mortgage. And then maybe some other subcontractors come on and you don't pay them either, whatever, something happens. All of those liens go back and take priority over your mortgage lender. I guess if you're the borrower, and that might not matter to you anymore, but it really matters to the title company, and that's why you're going to have a big problem if you start your project and then you try to get a loan afterward.
Yep, it's really, really important to know. So how would you solve that? Is there some kind of...
Well, that's a good point. One thing I think you could do, some title companies will let you do this, if you have kept very good records about who your subcontractors and material men are, and that you've got invoices, you can show that they've been paid, you've got lien releases when you did the paying. I mean, you may be able to find a title company that will give you insurance even though you've already started your project. Another thing that title companies often will do is they will require that you sign an indemnity, and they will look at your financials, and if your financials look good, they require you to basically indemnify them if something happens and a subcontractor needs to be paid later on, otherwise they'll put a lien on, right? So the stronger your financials look going into the project, the better. I mean, that's, I guess, goes without saying.
For new construction for us here, and well, not just new construction, so rehab's over $100,000 because we're regulated by the Department of Real Estate. We have to use funds control. So we use a company called BuildZig. Basically, all the money for construction or rehab goes into a third-party escrow. And when the draw request happens for money for the repairs, there's lien releases that have to be monitored, and they're monitoring all the liens to make sure by the end of the project you've got a lien-free project. So for the realtors out there that are maybe working with owner-occupants who think they want to take this on their own, maybe suggest something like a funds control. The company we use, again, is BuildZig, all one word. They've done a really good job, but that's a way to protect them. I mean, that was SB 978 in 2014, I think. That was a fun... Dodd-Frank wasn't enough, so California's like, let's do one more. So,
the Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.